The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to In Perspective. I am Bob Branco. Great to be with all of you today. This is episode 471, dated Friday, July 3rd, 2026. Before we continue, let me introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, send your cool weather this way.
I'm happy to try, but I don't think I'll be very successful. Here it's about 65 degrees and sunny. It's a typical summer day here in Coos Bay, Oregon.
We are in the middle of a heat wave. A majority of southern New England is either close to or above 100 degrees. And it's pretty unusual to have two or three consecutive days of 100 degrees, but it looks like that's what's going to happen around here. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our editor and producer. Thank you for what you do. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our shows. When you do on your chat line, thank you so much. Our media sources, thank you for airing us when you do. It is much appreciated. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our programs on my website. In order for people to find them, they must go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcast. Click on them, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Trish, who is our host for today's program, along with Herbie, who is our streamer. And because they are being, because we are being streamed, let me give out my email address for people who need to email us or would like to email us with questions or comments about our show. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. bobbranco93@gmail.com. I also want to say hi to two faithful listeners today. Actually, three. Glenn Grimes, Anthony Candela, and Deborah Joyce. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We appreciate that. Tomorrow is the 4th of July as we record this program, and it marks the 250th anniversary of the founding of our great nation. So what I thought, what Peter and I thought we would do today is devote this episode to our nation and to the 250th anniversary. And as a result, we've invited two special guests on our show to talk about that. We have the Reverend Michael Garrett and Mitch Pomerantz with us. Welcome to our program, gentlemen. We appreciate you being with us today on this special occasion.
Well, it's an honor to be here, Bob, on this special occasion. Thank you for the invitation.
200. Go ahead, Michael.
Likewise. I thank you for the invitation.
You're more than welcome, Michael. 250 years doesn't seem possible. I remember with the bicentennial, I was still at Perkins School at the time, and we had some celebrations at Perkins then, and I'm sure there were celebrations, generally speaking, throughout the United States then. And here we are at 250. Looking back, I wanted to ask either one of you your thoughts on how we've come this far and what you think would happen moving forward, if you know, if anybody knows, frankly.
You want to start, Michael?
Sure. Of course, I think when we go back to the history of this country, you know, if we just start at 1776, you know, that was a milestone. I think that we've come to a lot of milestones in this country, starting with the Declaration of Independence, and all of the movements that took, because the nation wasn't truly independent until they finished the wars. And if we look at our history, we've been involved in a lot of wars, but there's been a lot of progress. And the country, of course, is not without its hiccups and ups and downs, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of those later. But it's been a storied past and a future that has potential, but we'll see how it all works out.
To quote the song title from that great Lee Greenwood song of a couple of decades back, I am proud to be an American. I was a political science major in college. I've been kind of a follower of the history of this nation. I see the country, the progress it's made, the great experiment that the democracy has been. I also know that it isn't without its failings and its warts, but I don't know of any nation, past or present, that hasn't had issues as a part of its history. I am very concerned about our future for a number of reasons, which we'll probably go into later. But one of our founding fathers, and I don't remember, and I was debating whether to do the research or not, and I said it didn't matter whether it was Jefferson or Franklin or whomever, but one of our founding fathers said that a democracy can only continue if those people who reside in the country, who are living in a democracy, are knowledgeable and informed. And so my big concern regarding our nation's future is the fact that things have become so complex in modern society that I think it's very difficult for the average person to be well informed as to what's going on. So if that particular founding father's statement was accurate, and it's going to be difficult for us to survive another 50, let alone 250 years, because it is so difficult these days for the average American trying to eke out a living, support his family, and keep a job, all of the other factors. It's very difficult for the average person to be as well informed and knowledgeable, and that is to me the linchpin of democracy, an informed public.
Well, it starts with education, and there's been a lot of question lately about education here in this country, and civics are not being taught in some schools, which I think is wrong. There are young adults today who don't know anything at all about the Constitution, and I think that's sad. And it's, to me, it's all about education. Unless I'm mistaken, I'm hearing a lot of sad things about what's not being taught, like what was being taught when we went to school.
I think the other factor, Bob, and it certainly begins with education, but I also think it begins with teaching personal responsibility, that there are consequences to one's actions. That parenting is more than just having a baby. You have to really instill in your child, in your children, some ethics, a right and wrong way of doing things. And I know that's not real popular today to say that you know, you shouldn't judge people. Well, I freely admit I'm judgmental. I think we need more judgment in society, not less.
But I think that depends on the perspective in which you come from. You know, some people say that they have a saying that, well, I'm not a judge, but I'm a fruit inspector. In other words,
I missed that one, Michael.
yeah, that's yeah. Well, but in other words, when I look at you and I see you, what are you doing to bear fruit? What are you doing to take on, as you said, that responsibility, and to make sure that you are not only responsible for yourself, but at the least your loved ones?
Absolutely.
You have a responsibility to make sure that you do what the right thing, and that you care for those that you say you love.
Yep. And I've been reading a book. I've got another chapter or two, but the premise of the author is that the baby boom generation, from which I think all of us, at least Michael and myself and Bob and Peter, are part of, he calls baby boomers the generation of sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, all we do is think of ourselves, and our politicians think only of themselves, and that's what's wrong with the country. I think there's some truth to that. But I also think that in broader terms, you talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Survival is number one, survival/security. And I think that what we're seeing is so much more of an emphasis on taking care of ourselves and our families, if we have one, to the exclusion of the community in some cases, and that's a real problem in my view.
Well, I think too, Mitch. We what was this nation supposedly founded on? Freedom.
Yeah, for certain people.
But yeah, well,
for certain people.
That's a deep subject.
Yeah,
we'll get around to that.
I'm leading you to the edge of that lake.
Come on. We'll get there. But freedom, how do you define it? Because what freedom is for one person may not be freedom for the other.
Yeah.
And we take it so broadly in some cases where sometimes my freedom may infringe upon yours because...
Yes.
Depending on how we define what freedom is. And I think that's a problem in America because, I may want to do something. I'll give you an example. This preacher, pastor I know, he gave this example about being in a boat that everybody paid for a spot in the boat. So if I paid to be in the boat, that I own the spot where I am. But if I put a hole in my spot, not only will I drown, but everybody in the boat will drown.
Yeah.
And so my freedom is mine. I own it. I pay for it. But if I do something terrible with my part, with my freedom, I have the opportunity to impact everybody around me.
You have jeopardized your freedom. There are two sayings that I learned at a very early age. The first one is, your freedom ends at the tip of my nose. And the other one, and it's from a longer quote, and I tried to track it down, and I haven't been wholly successful, but it basically is, freedom without responsibility is license. And the definition of license is, you have the license to beg, borrow, steal, to do whatever. Freedom without responsibility is license, and your freedom ends at the tip of my nose. I think those two succinct statements sum up the issue that we're dealing with. And these days, I listen to, a couple of gentlemen who are conservative morning talk show hosts, and they tend toward being libertarians. And I'm thinking that on the one hand, libertarians, and I used to have a very close friend who was a libertarian, we had great discussions. Libertarians tend to believe that there should be limited government, limited oversight. People should have the right to do pretty much whatever they want as long as it doesn't harm anyone else. Problem with that is that if you look at today how people are, people tend, if they have that freedom, they abuse it. They do exactly what you're talking about, Michael. They say, oh, well, I can do whatever I want. No one's telling me not to, and I can do it until I get caught. So, you know, that's freedom without responsibility, and that makes it, that turns it into license. So, you know, that's always been my problem with conservative philosophy.
Well, and the problem with that is every human being has that tendency.
Yeah.
Because we think of ourselves first.
Yep.
And
yep.
If we had more of an attitude of, you know, I could do better if my neighbor does better. So if we all can pitch in and help each other, then we all will do better. It's kind of like a team sport. You know, you win as a team, you lose as a team, but you've got to know what the strengths of your teammates in order that you can put your strength with their strength. That's how you win. But that's in life too. I believe that if we were to help each other build our strength, and I said help each other, if we helped each other build our strength, we'd have a stronger country instead of the division that we see now.
And what we're seeing, and putting aside whether our generation is filled with sociopaths, and Michael and Peter certainly know because they've heard me prattle on about it many times. The most important books that I have ever read was Bowling Alone by Robert Putnam, which came out about 25 years ago, talking about the decline of organizations, the decline in community spirit, and whether Putnam posited that kind of began in the 1950s, and you know our generation was not of grown up age yet, so that was, they were still the what we call the greatest generation, but that's based on Putnam's research, that's where we began to isolate ourselves and to decide that we need to be more involved in ourselves and in our communities. You know, and those of us who are involved in organizations, American Council of the Blind, Lions clubs, as Donna and I are, you see the decline. You see that people are less involved, less engaged in their communities, and that does not bode well for any country, and certainly not one that believes in democracy and believes in working together to accomplish goals.
I see it also much, especially. A lot of younger people don't want to get involved with organizations because they probably feel, you know, they have lives of their own and they think differently than some of the rest of us maybe. And because I've noticed a trend away from organizations by the younger generations.
Yep, absolutely.
And the irony of that to me is that if they were to look back at history, and they don't want to look back at history, the younger folks, if they were to look back at history, they would find out that the organizations were the ones that lifted humanity or lifted the neighborhoods and the states they live in, the communities they live in. Those organizations, when people come together, they can lift people out of the situations that they're in. And then there are examples even today. What happens when a disaster happens? What takes place when that disaster happens? Millions of people band together to make donations, to board planes and trucks and trains to go and help out their fellow citizens.
The last time this country actually pulled together was immediately after 9/11.
Yeah.
Remember that.
An outside threat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wanted to pick on something that Mitch said, his aphorism. There's a former evangelical preacher named Josh McDowell, and he came up with this thing that has always stayed with me. And it goes like, rules without relationships result in rebellion.
That's another good one.
It's a really good one. And it sort of, I was thinking about that. And I was also thinking about when I was, a long time ago, 50 years ago, it was a different world in many ways. And, I was, of course, we were very different. I was, between my freshman and sophomore year in college. And I remember leading up to the bicentennial, there was a lot of talk about, I was a musician back then, and that's where I spent a lot of my energy in high school. American composers and American performers, Charles Ives. I mean, some of these names may not make any sense to any of you, but Charles Ives was an American early 20th century visionary composer of the, you know, of America. Scott Joplin was another one that came to mind, was talked about a lot. William Billings was a composer of the Revolutionary period, and all these composers and a lot of others, were celebrated. And when I, July 4th, 1976, I was with, my mom and my aunt, and I was attending at that time the Aspen Music Festival, which was a very high level music, conservatory for folks with talents in music of all different kinds. And it was a great day of celebration. It was a great day of, you know, going to church and then wandering around to a parade of, lousy musicians. Ironically enough, it wasn't us. And then a concert that featured American music and then lousy barbecue. But we were all together. We were talking about. And, you know, marching band, John Philip Sousa, another composer that was talked a lot about back then. And then of course fireworks. And it was one of those days that was iconic in my memory because the entire city of Aspen, Colorado, which, both the city and the music school people were all mingling together and having a great time and, you know, trying to make sense, trying to celebrate, which was a big deal. The other thing I remember back then was, the commercials, the radio commercials. There were so many commercials, and of course there were far fewer jingles back now than there were back then. But a lot of the commercials back then had a patriotic theme. You know, United Airlines had one. Kraft Cheese had one. Chevrolet, whatever happened to Chevrolet. Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. They go together in the good old USA. Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. Just so many of those kinds of commercials that were sometimes really annoying, sometimes very good. But it sort of, back then, it sort of brought us all together. And what, you know, we could talk about what happened to baseball and Chevrolet. That itself is a story. But this whole idea that Mitch was talking about, you know, community sort of getting lost and then combining this with the Josh McDowell comment, rules without relationships result in rebellion. And I can't help but think that we have rules that we're all supposed to follow, but the relationships we have amongst ourselves are fraying. I think in dangerous ways, that if we're going to move forward, we're going to have to find a way to rekindle those relationships.
Well, it's a topic for at least one, if not two, In Perspective programs. But, you know, to me, much of that isolation is a result of the internet and social media. You know, people don't know how to interact face to face, but you know, that's not the topic for today. But the people are isolated, are not working together, and you know, there are a lot of reasons for it, but I'm not sure how you bring that back, which is why, you know, I am proud. You know, we've managed 250 years. We've come through a lot of strife. You know, I'm very lucky. I didn't lose anyone in the Holocaust. I'm Jewish, for those who don't know. But both sides of my family came over from Europe in the early 1900s. So as far as I know, there were no relatives that you know succumbed over there during World War II. But the fact of the matter is that this country has given lots of us with disabilities, and particularly in our case, people who are blind, has given us opportunities that in most other countries we wouldn't have.
That's true.
You know, I'm not a world traveler. I think we've been to about 30 countries. The only other country that really seems to care and help blind people is Spain. Because of the national lottery, which was established under their former dictator back in the 30s. Was it Franco?
Yeah.
I think it was Franco. When the national lottery was established, the blind of that time were the ones who were given the opportunity to sell raffle tickets. And it's now been close to 90 years, and blind people in Spain, lots of them still sell tickets, but some of them, many of them run businesses, they're entrepreneurs. That's probably the only other country that I know of where you as a blind person, I as a blind person, have a chance to succeed beyond just, you know, living hand to mouth. And, you know, I've talked before about I was very lucky to have a 34-year career working in government, but I got that opportunity because I was allowed to compete. I had to fight back in the 70s, be allowed to take the civil service test, but when I did, I competed against sighted people and was high enough on the list that a gentleman who wasn't scared off by me being blind was willing to hire me. And that was my 34-year career in municipal government. But there aren't too many places in the world where blind people and people with other disabilities have that same opportunity in 2026.
Go ahead, Michael.
I have sort of a similar background, Mitch being Jewish and me being a black American, and growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in this country and having to compete and fight for my job. I tell people all the time, there was one gentleman who said, you know, if it had been me, I wouldn't have hired you. And I don't know if it was because I was black or because I was blind, but back in during that time in the mid 70s, there weren't many black people in the investment arena. But I had to compete for my job, just keep my job, even as a blind person, when I was losing my vision, I couldn't use the CCTV. I finished the Opticon course in 6 days. 4 days. to because I needed to have that job. But the thing is, when we look back at history, I tell my kids all the time that somebody was on a ship from Africa. Somebody survived so that we could be here today. And we go way back to helping to build this country. But to me, this is the only country I know. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Africa. I can't trace my lineage that far back. So yeah, I'm going to celebrate. There are some black folks who don't want to celebrate, but this is the only country I know, even with its warts. It's still the only country I know. And even though I had to fight, you know, I was able to carve out a decent living, raise my family, and watch them flourish, you know, with all my grandkids and great-grandkids. So I'm going to celebrate even with the country's warts and even with it seemingly going backwards. I'm still going to celebrate. Because as I said, this is the only country I know.
So my family is sort of interesting. My dad, I am not Jewish, was not raised Jewish. Neither was my dad. He was raised in Germany, he was born in 1918. And, he had to leave Germany because the powers that be indicated that he had too much Jewish blood in him. So the whole family had to leave and come to this country. And it for me, it shows the cross currents. You know, the good news is he came to this country. He was able to succeed. They support him so that he could succeed and lived a great life and helped lots of students. He was a chemistry professor at a liberal arts school. Yet I just learned a few years ago that the system that Hitler used to determine who was Jewish and who wasn't came from this country. It came from, in part from the way we viewed black people. Were you black enough, or not black enough, or however you want to frame it? And that's kind of, icky, as it were. There's lots of great things about this country. And of course, there are things that aren't as good. But I'm always, of course, I'll always be grateful to be born in this country. Mitch said it well about blind folks. And, we should remember that ever since 1976, so many things have happened for the betterment. Think about the Americans with Disabilities Act.
I was just thinking about that one.
Yeah, and in 1990 and all the work that Mitch and other people did to make that happen. And, how women have moved forward. How African Americans have moved forward, have lots of other groups have had their chance. The gay folks no longer need to live in the closet as much as they used to. But the fear is, as Michael said, we might be slipping backward. And that's a scary thought for those of us who, benefited from what's happened here, and in many cases helped propel us to where we are. That's where we find ourselves. And, thinking back to, I've seen if you think about the music scene, there isn't nearly as much, hype about American composers as there was back in the 1970s. There's still some. Florence Price, African American composer, has been celebrated recently. The commercials that are out there, I haven't heard one commercial, jingle or anything built on, the fact that we're 250 years old and isn't that wonderful? Not one. And then we could talk about what's going on in baseball and Chevrolet and all that. But it's a
Peter,
world. Yeah.
To a couple of your points about your father being perceived as Jewish, in this country, if I remember from my HR days, if you and this gentleman I was talking about, my libertarian friend from many years ago, was also Native American. I believe that you are considered eligible for benefits, tribal benefits, if you have 1/16th Native American blood, which ain't a lot. Let's say your great-grandparents, I believe it's 1/16th. In talking about competing, and you're talking about going backwards, some of us think that once this next 2 years passes, and it will, what we're beginning to see nationally is a move to the left that makes progressivism look like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Social Democrats are winning. And the philosophy, basically, it's very anti-competition. It is basically, you know, everybody has suffered. Everybody is a victim. And we need to take care of you. And that scares me. The move leftward that I'm beginning to see scares me as much as what you perhaps perceive as our going backward to the right. I think that both extremes are anti-democratic and pose a huge, huge threat to this country's continuing.
And that's why Mitch and I have this conversation all the time, because that's why I talk about, you know, freedom and with the responsibility, because you are responsible for your brother, and you can't give everything, nor can you take things away. You know, Mitch talks about the social democrats, and then there are the people on the far right. Both extremes are not good for any society.
Do you think we'll ever see socialism in this country?
Yes, I do. I believe that.
How can we afford it, Mitch?
We can't. I really hope that I'm not around for it. But I say that because so many young people, so many younger people believe that this is the way to go. This is the wave of the future. You see it in elections. As us old timers, I almost used another word, starts with an F. As us old timers move on, it's going to be the younger folks who become the voting majority, and I don't think they are as fearful. They, you know, as somebody pointed out earlier, they don't pay much attention to history. They don't see what happened to a socialist, because Russia, Soviet Union, was never communist. It was socialist. Pure communism is preached by Marx. They never got there. They were a socialist country. But they don't care why the Soviet Union fell apart. It fell apart because people had no incentive to succeed, to do better. And that's what happens under socialism. You lose your incentive to do better. You coast. And I really see that as more and more younger Americans think that that's okay. And it's not.
Well, what I would say, Mitch. Good, Michael.
Let me just throw this in, Peter. I believe that there is no one governmental style that will make a nation whole. There's got to be a combination between more than one. For instance, I'm moving toward saying that social capitalism might be something to be tried. Because if you adopt a system that leaves somebody out, then they're hurt, and that weakens your country. And you've got to have an avenue for all people in your society.
We are.
I don't know if that makes sense or not, but.
I do want to make one quick comment, Bob. I know it's time for questions, but Mitch, you said people aren't connected with history, and that's true. But there's another part of this as well, is that younger people see what's around them. And there was a term I heard the other a while back during the 2020 election called Darwinian socialism. Survival is the kind of socialism that is labeled as capitalism that preaches the survival of the fittest. And that's what young people are seeing. They're seeing, folks with, lots of money getting lots and 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 lots more money and power and prestige at the expense of the rest of us. And people see that in all kinds of ways. The rules that apply to them do not apply to them. They see this. And who were the arbiters of the rules? The government.
Here's the problem. Given the same opportunity that the Jeff Bezoses and the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs had, given the same opportunity, 98% of the of average citizens would do the same thing.
Don't forget Musk.
That is true. I think, Mitch, you're on to something. But I think that's what a lot of people are rebelling against. Rules without relationships result in rebellion. It's a perfect example.
But it's jealousy. They hate it, but if they were in a position to do it, they do it too.
Well, if you don't call it jealousy, maybe, but they're pissed off for whatever reason, and it's kind of a combination of jealousy and what they're seeing around them, which is really true, I think, about that. The evidence is not. You know, there's all kinds of studies to talk about how the government does really well at supporting those with money and does a terrible job supporting those of us with less money.
Tell me a nation in our thousands of years of history that wasn't that way.
I agree.
Be it a dictatorship. I think it's human nature.
Yeah, it is human nature. But we got to figure out a way. And the only way I know how to do that is to strengthen relationships. Can we, we need to throw
it. Okay. Comment. So this is a tribute show about the 250th anniversary of the founding of our nation. We have Mitch Pomerantz and Reverend Michael Garrett with us here on In Perspective. So if anybody wants to ask any question, now is their opportunity to do so. So let me ask Trish if anybody has their hand raised.
Yes, sir. We actually have several. The first one is Deanna.
Welcome, Deanna.
Okay, so several years ago, I was asked to write an opening statement for a multicultural affairs gathering down in St. Louis at a college there. So this is what I wrote. This is a city in the heart of a nation. Her people have come here from many far places. They came seeking a brighter tomorrow for their children. Even my people came here crossing a land bridge. How could it not be so? This is a gathering place of many hearts. Our past is stamped on our skins and faces. It shapes our thoughts and colors our beliefs. We must learn to accept and understand each other. How could it not be so? If we join hands to acknowledge our shared humanity, to open our minds and hearts to one another, our paths cross here as we pursue our life journeys. We are all children of one earth under one sky. How could it not be so? So that's the message that I believe this country should be. And it's not living up to it. It's, but I also believe that Steinbeck had it right when he said, mankind takes two steps forward and slides one step back, but he never goes all the way back. So that's why our history is full of stepping forward. We've done away with child labor. We've given women more freedom. They can vote. They can own property. Those were things that were not possible before coming to this country. We can be better. And if we look to that, because the only reason that Michael and Mitch and I had opportunities was because of affirmative action. When artificial barriers were taken down so that brighter children, regardless of where they came from, had access to better education and had support to get through college and to become contributing members of society. Previous to that, the only schools that my people knew were the ones where their children were taken from them and locked away and not brought home until they didn't know who they were, that they lost their connection to the people and they were forced to behave and learn and be as white as they could be, but they could never really be white because they weren't. So they were lost between two worlds. So we have to stop demanding that everybody march in lockstep and accept that you can be something else from me and still be my neighbor, my friend, my part of my community. And I can be part of your community and your world.
Point well taken, Deanna.
Thank you, Deanna.
Point well taken.
Deanna.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your contribution. Makes a lot of sense. Okay, who do we have, Trish, next?
Next we have Donna.
Hello, Donna. Welcome.
Is that Donna?
It is. Thank you. And what I will say is God knows exactly what he's doing, because Deanna and I didn't talk at all. And Deanna, in such a beautiful, perfect way, laid the foundation that I wanted to share. So, what we need to look to is what we all have in common. We all also have differences. We all come from different places. And the blessing for us as people who live in the United States of America, as it is called, is that we do have the ability to do that if we want to. We need to find center. We need to accept everybody where they are. We need to not tell others how to speak. And we need to have respect for each other, because all of us are going to use different words, because we come from different places, and it's okay, because we are free living where we live. And the more that we can all look to what we have in common, that is what will unite us. That is what will make us stronger and will allow us to continue moving forward in freedom. Again, it's not perfect, as everyone has said. And so it's how we choose to live and what we choose to look for in each other, because we all have things in common. Thank you for hearing from you. Oh, and by the way, I am Latina. I have experienced discrimination. I did witness, as a little girl, my father be mistreated by authority. And you know, so I have experienced that as well. But I also was raised to respect and honor and find center and balance. And that's my hope as we move toward the future, knowing what we are experiencing today. Thank you for hearing me.
You're welcome, Donna. Thank you so much for your talk.
Very quickly, Deanna's and Donna's comments reminds me of something I thought a lot about in the late 1990s, which is the tension between unbridled capitalism and spiritual faith communities. Somehow faith communities can contribute to this coming together if we can make it happen. We even talked a lot about the power of religion in the shaping of this country, both in a positive and negative way. But it's another part of our history. I will shut up. Thank you, both of you.
Yes. Trish, who's next? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to make a quick comment. And Donna and I have had this conversation a good many times. When the problem with accepting people where they are is we tend to go over that guardrail and determine that everything is okay. You know, I'm okay, you're okay, goes back to the 60s and 70s. And again, without some ethical compass, without some personal responsibility, saying that I accept everybody for where they are, for what they believe, tends to end up not in always a good place. I think it does contribute in some ways to some of that isolation, that social isolation that we touched on. Obviously, and I said earlier, I tend to be judgmental. I am. I there are times when I'll say, oh, that's where they're coming from. I don't think that's a healthy place. I don't think that's a good place for them or for anybody else. You know, I'm not going to say anything necessarily, but I do think sometimes we should be judging people. You want to talk about the super capitalists who've made their billions, and if you criticize them for having their billions, well, you're judging. You're saying, you should have stopped at some point along the way. Well, anyway, that's my comment on that.
And so I just wanted to piggyback on something that Donna said, and that she opened by saying, God knows what he's doing in this country. And I totally and wholeheartedly agree, because as a minister of the gospel, I look at people, I try to see people through God's eyes. And so I'm looking at the tendencies, the self-indulgence that we all have, and how that goes back to what you said, Peter, from Josh McDowell, the relationships. And it is so important that we dwell on the relationships that we have, the relationships that we build, and how we treat each other. This country will never go forward if we fight amongst each other, and that's what's happening. We are dividing amongst each other politically, ethnically, socially, and
right.
We have to come together.
You are right. You are so right. We see that every day.
Who else do we have on the, who else does that?
We got about 5 or 6 more minutes to go. Go ahead, Drew.
Who's next?
The next person we have is Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. Welcome.
Hi. I think I've spoken up here before about this sort of thing before, but I say it's better for me. I've tried several different jobs, different places, in hospitals, out of hospitals, in certain jobs. I've worked in for social services before. I worked in hospitals before. I've worked at an office job before. I've known about that. I've had troubles memorizing things, doing things through dictation. Other things, I found out it's better for me not
5:55 p.m. 7 communications clubhouse. No,
it's better for me not to be working. I have been holding people up at jobs that I have tried. I have been holding people up. I have been absolutely, you know, none of my jobs worked out really completely well. In fact, you know, I've been, let's say I've been slow, less productive. People did not like that. I didn't get high marks for productivity. I was too slow. Almost every job that I tried, and I didn't do well. People didn't like it. People wanted me out of there. In every single case. So I eventually gave up and I said, essentially, people don't want me. They don't want me there. In the last job, I had to fight to stay there. I eventually gave it up. And so I said to myself, if people don't want me, why should I try? Why should I do it? And I didn't feel badly after that about taking SSI. And, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I felt that if I couldn't do it, why should I feel guilty? And so I felt like I shouldn't be judged anymore.
And we do have three hands.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Stacey. We got three hands in about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
We're not gonna
go ahead. All right. Carla is next.
Oh, Carla.
Carla, welcome.
My grocery delivery just came off the bed. Oh God. And I just have a quick question. I'll try to listen while I'm processing groceries. My question is, I've been teaching for the last, over 40 years, and I am seeing an alarming difference in my students don't know some of the common things to culture. They don't even know about the stars and stripes forever. I used to use that to teach verbs and things like that.
As I was saying at the beginning.
And I just want some advice. I gotta run. I wish I had been one of the earlier ones called on, but I've got to get my groceries. But anyhow, that's what I was going to say and ask. If anybody has any advice, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Carla.
Bring his civics back to schools.
Wherever you're teaching, Carla, if you can work some of those basic lessons into your curriculum, do it.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Play the Stars and Stripes Forever and talk about what it means. You know, it's a catchy tune. It's a tingle, to put it in advertising lingo. You know,
in your language, Peter, anything John Philip Sousa does is fantastic.
It is indeed.
Okay, we got time for one more, Trish. One more quick one.
All right, and it is a phone number. Area code 571-917. Go ahead.
That Angel.
571.
Hello, listeners. On Tuesday, July 7th at 6 p.m., Speaking Volumes begins a brand new book titled Say Nothing, a true story of murder and memory in Northern Ireland by Patrick Radin Keefe. Be sure to get your copy now for this stimulating conversation.
What's your vision?
My vision's 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot see.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.